Welcome to Scrappy ABM, your source for groundbreaking approaches that don't break the bank. ABM shouldn't cost $200K in tech to even get started. So if you want to get started with ABM or make your program even better without investing a massive amount of money, you're in the right place. Each week, we'll hear from the brightest minds in the marketing world who are redefining ABM, achieving incredible results with untraditional methods, limited resources, and a whole lot of creativity. This isn't a show about how much money you can spend on fancy tech or overhyped tools. Instead, it's about celebrating creative problem solving and the scrappiness it takes to get ABM right. We'll dive into how these marketing leaders built robust ABM strategies with limited resources, revealing the actionable insights that led to their biggest wins. So if you're a marketer ready to challenge the status quo and build a scalable, efficient, effective marketing strategy, Scrappy ABM is the show for you. So if you're ready to discover ABM strategies that are lean, impactful, and utterly transformative, let's dive into this episode. Hello and welcome to Scrappy ABM. This is your podcast with practical playbooks that don't break the bank. Today, I am joined by Sarah Segal, who is the Director of Growth Marketing at Open Sesame. And let me just tell you, I'm super pumped to have this episode. I was reading over the just some of the information we're going to talk through today. I was like, golly, we are reading from the same hymnal. Like, it's just like, we've got the same brain when it comes to ABM. So I'm excited to dig into kind of the challenges that come with the inherited tech stack. So Sarah, thank you for joining me today.
Absolutely. I'm so excited to chat with you. And I know it's funny because like this is Scrappy ABM, but I know what we're going to talk about is how are you scrappy when you have a huge tech stack that is, it's anti-scrappy. How are you scrappy in an anti-scrappy world?
Yeah. And it's funny, it's unfortunate, but like there's been a lot of transition and a lot of people that have gotten new jobs because sometimes like larger marketing teams were let go and then they replace four marketers with two. And you step into a situation where you already have the tech stack, quote unquote, in place. It's not very well set up. It's not been well utilized, or worse, like in the transition period, somebody used it, but like didn't use it well at all. And now you've got all this like crap that's been set up. Yep. So again, I'm really excited to kind of dig into, okay, you step into an inherited tech stack, you step into the big tech stack that's often in place in these mid-market organizations. Where do you start to actually build an ABM program?
Yeah, it's interesting. So my last two roles, this one included, that's been the situation, right? Come in and there's usually, it's B2B, right? It's B2B tech. And especially I think over the last 10 years, there's been a lot of turnover. The market has been a roller coaster. That's just common. And companies have gone through massive funding rounds and marketing teams get a lot of money and think that they should buy all the stuff. And then leadership changes and teams change. And I think more often than not, that's the lives of a lot of B2B marketing leaders who are in either mid-market or, you know, late stage startup. If you come in and you have one of the things that's great, you hear about it through your interview process of, hey, we have this tech stack. Awesome. Cool. And then you get in, you're like, oh, but it's not set up the right way. Oh, what is this data here? And like, okay. It's a double-edged sword, right? Because one of the things I love about your podcast, what I've heard is these tools aren't inherently bad. They're not. And a lot of companies, like you can, I'm not going to say you absolutely need them, but they can be massive value drivers and you can get a return on them if they're done the right way. And one of the things that I've learned through trial and error coming in is the power of looking at how are these set up and how are these integrated? And the one thing that I found the last two times, it's really helpful and it's painful to do. And this is where kind of being scrappy in an anti-scrappy world comes in, is making the effort to create a true go-to-market tech stack map that is focused on integrations versus focused on the actual tech stack. I don't know. Do you follow Scott Brinker with his MarTech stack awards? I love those. Like, those are so cool and they're beautiful. And this past year he just released them and I'm like, oh, they're so cool. And those are wonderful. One thing that often is missed though in a MarTech stack map is the integrations. Yep. So ours is ugly, but it shows, it has all the different lines of what's connected, because it doesn't matter if you have all the tools or what the tools are. I think one of the biggest things to look at is, what are those tools feeding? And if are integrations available? Are they connected? And if they are you actually utilizing them? Because that's like the first micro step. It takes a lot of work, but that's the first step of actually coming in, I think, to a new org as a marketing leader, someone in marketing ops or go to market and saying, all right, how do we use these tools? Like, we have these tools, how are we actually going to use them the right way?
Yeah, I love the call out of, again, like, tools are not bad. And I appreciate the fact that you hear me on that. I do have a lot of people that think that scrappy ABM is anti-tech. It's not. It's just right step. I heard this phrase last week that was sequence over strategy. So again, it's like, what's the right sequence of things to do? Because good technology and the bad timing is bad technology. Like, it's just how it goes. So appreciate you calling that out. And the second thing was just like the recognition of what's the purpose and the function of the tool within our program. Like, one of the things that we always do whenever we're building anything for any client is we build out the data flow. And it's like, what tool feeds into what other tool so that we can execute our programs? And it's giving every tool a job in the same way that we like build an ABM team. Like, everybody has their role and responsibility. And I don't know that people necessarily do that with their tech stack of like, what's the role and responsibility of our tool within this current program? I love that call out.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, one piece of advice I'd give to any, whether it's like a marketing leader, even as IC, right? Even if you're, you know, part of the team and part of managing some of these tools. And I emphasize go to market, because when I see a lot of MarTech stacks or maps, or when teams look at MarTech, they're really only looking at MarTech. And one thing I think is hyper valuable is, this is not just MarTech. You should be looking at your sales tech. You should be looking at your ops tech. Like, what are your ops teams and your BI teams using? Heck, when we did this exercise a couple of months ago here, we identified, our engineering team is using Segment. That's a tool marketing could be using for customized, you know, trigger-based integrations and zero-party data, like, being able to trigger off of that. So I think that's one big thing is, like, you know, any team member, any marketer, like, taking that bigger picture and remembering, like, it's not, it's just like ABM is not marketing. The M is false. And any type of go-to-market motion should be look, including how you're looking at your tech and evaluating your tech, should include that go-to-market tech and having that as part of like that identification of, how do we identify it? How do we see what's mapped together? And then like, then my next two steps I call them is like, call out what's wrong, and then start cutting. Because you like it, it's that's usually the next step, is like, start to cut, not necessarily tech, but cut processes and flows and things that are just wasting effort and wasting time.
Yes. So I'm curious, as you're then mapping out the full go-to-market tech stack, like, how do you categorize some of these things? Like, is it, this is a marketing tool, this is a sales tool, this is an ops tool, or is it more like, this is a content tool, this is enablement? Like, how are you categorizing them so you can understand how everything works together and then where to cut?
Yeah, that's a great way. So I do it in two different ways. Our team's doing it in two ways. And these two ways are in two different views. So one is an actual map. So using a Miro or a Lucidchart or whatever, one is a map. And I think it's valuable, the way I have set those pieces set up is, it's more based off like, what is the tool doing? So we have like, hey, our traditional like CRM and map, bar outreach, or like all the, what are the tools doing? And that, it doesn't matter as much of how it's categorized. We just have those tools on a view that honestly makes it as easy as possible to follow the integration lines, because things like Salesforce have 20 different, you know, lines going out and coming into it. And we just have a view to say like, all right, which team owns this tool? Because I think that ownership is super valuable. You know, like, who's the team member who actually owns this tool? And that's just color coded. The other way that we look at that is in a traditional, just a spreadsheet view that's more focused on like, what's the business impact and the financial impact of our go-to-market tech stack. And that is categorized out by team ownership of, is this a sales tool? Is this a marketing tool? Because that's more aligned to like, how is this impacting our P&L and how does our finance team actually look at this? And when we you know, when we come in and start suggesting changes, which we can talk about of how to navigate that, when you take that out of just marketing, you realize there are likely changes that you need to suggest as a marketer or whatever team you're on that impact other teams and that maybe actually impacted a tool that they own. So that's where like it's really important to outline like, yes, this is the team who owns it. Here's the amount we're spending and all the details on like seats and all that good stuff.
Yeah, I really, again, I love the recognition that it's probably not a singular view. Like it is these two views that one is more process flow and the other is ownership. And I think the categorization there of, okay, how does all this work together? One of my favorite words in the world of ABM is orchestration. So again, we think about how do all of these pieces come together to build the beautiful symphony that is our account-based marketing program. What's the orchestration piece? And then the next is who truly owns it? And again, like you've got to think across all the different teams because ABM, as you called out earlier, it's not actually marketing. It's really kind of a full funnel type program. So, okay, now we've got this beautiful, but also probably scary and messy Lucid chart that is how all of our tools play together. And then we have ownership of who is really accountable for the use of that tool as it relates to the process. I'm curious though, how do you then take the Lucid chart and the ownership map to then break that down into what are the actual processes that are currently in place using these different tools?
A couple of different ways. And I think that's where as a new team member, the finesse of you can't change everything overnight, but you have to move and change things. That's usually probably why you're hired. It's like to make some adjustments and improve the business in a way of how do you balance those two? And some team, I think every team's going to be different, but one thing that I've noticed is that usually depending on the leadership, depending on the team, depending on the style of work, all teams do something different. And that's like, I'm a big proponent of go-to-market ops, whether it's as a function itself or whether there's like an internal council of that, it's super valuable. We have that here and it's probably one of the most valuable teams because it's so focused on how are these different tools working together? How do we all get on the same page and communicate the same way? I'm a big process doc gal. So even, you know, we have that as a big at the macro level and then at the micro level, being able to have process docs of, all right, between, for example, we have SixthSense, between SixthSense and Salesforce, what are the tool, like what are the different fields? What are the objects that we're pushing? What's the data and how, which teams are actually being impacted by this on the front end, as well as the back end of that. So we have process docs for most of those, but it doesn't come overnight. And ownership can be a real sticking point because I think the way that like you can, I'm a big proponent of documentation, but I hate documentation just for the sake of it. So like it's, I hate that it's not a one, like it's not a one size fits all, but I think I think my biggest advice would be like the tools that you can own and you're responsible for, or you have some type of big impact that are impacting your role, that's where you should take ownership or have some type of, you know, line of communication with the other teams of this is how I anticipate this tool is being used or this process is being run. Are we all on the same page with this ops, sales, whoever else teams like, and make and confirming everyone is.
Yeah. So again, what I'm hearing is it's almost this, like in the process of this Lucid chart that maps out how all of our tools work together and the ownership chart, like in order to actually then assess how all the processes are being developed, it sounds like kind of the next step is how do we build the ops go-to-market council to some extent. Yeah. And it's the, again, it's your, I think of it primarily given what I do for a living, it's like the ABM team, that's that cross-functional team that does meet. But it sounds like, and again, in this context, it's less like go to market as a program and more like operational, like what's the foundation that actually enables us to go to market?
Yeah. Cause I mean, I'm very bullish on ops is the core of go to market. It just is because Adam, even without a big tech stack, whatever you be, the operational backend of is the data in the right place? Is the data flowing from system to system? Does sales know what they're like? All that information like lives with ops usually, or whatever team member. If you're, you know, if you're a single person marketer, you are playing ops. So that really is the crux of any strong ABM or go-to-market motion.
So in that, I mean, how are you going about the, I don't know, internal communication and getting the buy-in to even form that like ops council so you can effectively map all this out?
Yeah, that's my favorite topic, internal communication, because it can be tricky. I think one is, the first off, you have to do an assessment. Whether you're new or whether you've been in the org a while, like how do the ops and go-to-market teams, sales, marketing, customer success, how do those work together today? Because sometimes they have a really great relationship and that's easy. Maybe something already exists that's just not formalized with that name. And there's like a recurring meeting or a Slack channel. You can just be like, hey, let's formalize this. And that was the case here, which was awesome because there's been a great relationship. So that just becomes more of a, all right, this is valuable. How do we just make this more of a, you know, a standing meeting or a standing connection? Who owns what? And it makes it a lot easier. I've been in situations before where that's not the case. And I think, you know, with whether it's creating a council, whether it's changing a process, or, you know, with when you come in and have a big tech stack like this and you identify, hey, maybe we don't need this tool, or there's an overlapping function between these two tools at renewal, I recommend we cut this feature out. All of these require persuasion. Yep. And there is a great HBR, like Harvard Business Review article from like the 90s. It's old school, but it's about the art of persuasion. And it's probably one of my favorites that I go to. And it really breaks it down into four steps that I think are highly valuable for any marketer, really anyone who is trying to get, you know, like make a process change, a tool change, whatever it may be. The first is establishing credibility. And I think the way that works in B2B is, can you do it? Are you talking about it, or can you show, especially with your ops folks or your sales partners, can you show them specifically like you're in the data, you're in the tools, and can produce the results? So you can't make that change first 15 days. Unlike maybe if you can, awesome, but you got to establish some type of credibility, and that's not, you know, no offense to the LinkedIners like us, like we're on LinkedIn a lot, but that's not usually the credibility that works internally. So you got to show them like something works. Second is you have to, I think it's like freight. It's like whiffy, like what's in it for you. My old CMO that was our weekly communications to sales of like, it was called the weekly whiffy from marketing. And it framed everything. You know, if we were saying, oh, we're running a campaign this week, that wasn't the announcement. It was like, this campaign is focused on this persona, and sales, we need you to do this, or sales, this is going to be why it's valuable to you. So whatever those teams are you're working with, it's like, how is this ask going to help them? Really, like, what's the value for them to get out of this? And then the next two are really, it's like, how are you presenting this? What's the language you're using? I don't know about you, but my internal teams, ops, sales, marketing, and usually some type of like executive leadership, I can have the same message or the same, you know, the same goal, the same project, but the message is completely different to every one of them. Yep. Sales is fun. It's like what's going to be easy and fast. It's a short Slack message, super simple. Ops, very detailed. What are the what ifs that's included? What's the outcome? That's like the timeline. And with exec or finance, it's high level. What's the business impact? What's the pipeline? Or, you know, if it's efficiency, whatever the, you know, whatever the company OKRs or goals are. So I know that's a lot in one place, but I think it's, you know, it's necessary. It's, I think persuasion and the value of internal comms is so underutilized in, regardless of the team size, like that is the biggest flex I think any marketer can, like, if you can learn to master that, do it. use AI to help you, you know, adjust your messaging and stuff, but like learn how to master internal communications.
Yeah. And I honestly think we probably need to cover more on that in this show, because in past roles, I have been either entirely successful because of my ability to internally communicate an idea, or unsuccessful because of my inability to internally communicate an idea. Yeah. And I mean, to the point where like I got numerous promotions or like was on the chopping block. I don't just mean like a campaign failed. I mean, like my looking back historically, like was I successful in that role or not, was entirely dictated by my ability to get buy-in on ideas. And ABM for so many people is just purely an experiment. That's like, we're going to try something completely new because we've never done this before. So I really appreciate the deep dive into like, okay, we're going to now do a massive shift. How do we effectively communicate that? And like, as someone that probably posts too much on LinkedIn, when I was internal, one of the things that I did, sometimes to my detriment actually, was I'd post ideas and like ideas publicly and see how people respond to that idea publicly. And sometimes it would like fall immediately dead and people would call me out and say like, yeah, that's a really bad idea. And like, then we didn't actually do it. And like, but other times it would gain a lot of traction and like really take off. And it was a helpful way for me to validate some external, like, hey, I'm not crazy. This idea may work. So again, that's something that I've done, but also to your point, like now being an organization owner, like I am much less in the weeds of the data sometimes because I'm like doing other things. So I think if you are in the weeds, like your ability, I was even on a call earlier today where somebody was talking through costs. And like I helped put together the actual proposal. So I was able to quote offhand the cost, which then built the authority, which then got buy-in for the client. So like your ability to be in the weeds and then quote things offhand because it shows that you've done your research, I think is such an undervalued thing. Because when you're close to the data and close to the customer, you have the best opinion because it's founded in like a lot of research.
Yep. There is a term, an old CMO used that was called helicoptering for that. And that was one of the biggest pieces of like mentoring advice she would give me as I was growing in my career with her, was you need to make sure you're able to helicopter, meaning can I go down into the weeds when needed? Mm-hmm. And then can I helicopter back up to the big picture, which like it's stuck in my brain. It's one of those pieces that now I always think about with any program or, you know, initiative or campaign of how can I help support my team members. So like I have a team of seven now, and I think there's a level of established trust, like going to that credibility of, hey, can this person go and make this change in HubSpot, or can this person actually create this deck to help with supporting a campaign, or, you know, how do we promote this, you know, this new event, and then go back up and show, here's our marketing strategy. Here's what we're going to present to the board next week. Here are the five metrics that we're going on. And I think that ability to helicopter up and down is, it comes with some experience. I don't think that's something that you can easily learn immediately, because like you need to know what is your exact team or what is the company, like to your point of like, what's the customer thinking about, like there's a lot of touch points, but I think it's one of those valuable tools.
It's really hard. Like especially for like the small team marketer that like has to be in the tactics and then communicate strategy. And then like when you're speaking to your CEO, communicate vision, like the ability to go up and down the different levels of communication is so difficult. It's such a learned skill, but if you can master that skill, like you will get further buy-in and actually go further in your career. So I just love the call out.
I'll also add to that, and I know like all the plugs for ChatGPT and AI and stuff like that, right? But I do think like that is one of my biggest time hacks over the last, you know, year, 8 months or whatever, of adjusting messaging for different audiences. Of putting in, hey, here's an email, or here's a slide deck, here's a view that I'm going to submit. You are the director of growth marketing at Open Sesame. Da, 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 and like, here's this message that you're sending to sales. Now adjust this for the CEO. Now adjust this for your marketing team. Because it's not going to be perfect, but it helps you like take that first few, you know, steps of like, how do I now adjust this? And creates that one-to-one or that, you know, that seeming of the, at the end user, the end recipient, if they feel like that message is for them, it's seen differently. It's experienced differently. And I feel like just that those little tweaks that can help save you time, but also make it look like a little bit more polished of here's how I'm presenting this new ABM play, or here's the reason why I think we should cut this tool, and sharing that with those different team members in a way that speaks to them is so valuable. But that's hard. Like you said, that's super hard to do. And I'm ChatGPT is my best friend right now with making those changes.
I love it. Well, normally we dig into things around results, but like this feels like really like a prereq for building an ABM program. So I'm just curious, as people start to hopefully have a realistic expectation around timelines, like mapping out all of your tools based in a Lucid chart and then ownership and then process mapping and understanding where you need to focus and where to cut, like, as you've done this now a few times, how long does this process generally take?
It never ends. Can I take that as an answer? Is that an answer? No, that's the real answer. No, but I'll tell you specifically for us at this current role, it took about a quarter, a little less than a quarter to get it in a place that we feel really confident about it. And again, this is a big tech stack. This is a significant amount of information and coming in. Again, you come in and I think every leadership regime has different focuses, some on brand, some on campaign, some on, you know, and it depends on where the business is at. Our business, you know, was one that was impacted in a positive way from COVID because we are online e-learning content marketplace. So the business at that time was very big growth at all costs in a way, and that we didn't have to there. I don't think there was as much of a concern with the operational efficiencies. So it took a long time because there was a lot of weeding out who owns what tool. So that took a little over 2 months to do that. I think you can do a lot less time. I can do a little more. I think the biggest focus is figuring out who's going to own it. And if you're listening to this, it's likely going to be you because people don't usually sign up for this. Yep. And just taking the stab at getting a first version out. It's not going to be perfect, but showing teams, like, this is part of that establishing credibility, even like long-term. Like if you're showing, you're thinking about the business's tech stack and the business, like this is usually like OpEx is usually a big part of a business P&L, like those invest like expenses. If you can show whatever level you're at, that you're taking an effort in that, that's going to get the eyes of executive leadership. That's really, it's going to showcase, all right, this person's thinking about more than just their role. So I think the biggest thing is regardless of how much time, like try to limit yourself. All right, I'm going to take this week and spend 5 hours to like get a list of all of our different tools and put it on a Lucid chart. And then next week, I'm going to work on the lines of what integrates and then get everyone who owns these tools to look at it. So I think it depends. That's the wonderful answer of most marketing processes. Oh, yeah. But I think keeping it to a minimum or the maximum of a quarter is going to be really helpful.
I love the realistic expectations because I think, I don't know if you're experiencing this, but generally speaking, I hear from most people they want everything done in about a 30-day time frame. And that's like the most. So the realistic expectation of like, this is a process, but it's a worthwhile process. And I just think from a results perspective, I'm going to ask you to necessarily open up the P&L. But at the end of the day, like if you find places where you're spending lots of money on technology and it's not being used, or you have duplicate features between different tools, because it's happening a lot now, and you end up actually saving the company lots of money because you cut tech, like that's a pretty significant result. Be able to spend less money to generate the same revenue, that's a win.
Yes. I think it's a win in a couple ways. One, and I'll just to give you some numbers, we've saved probably about, I want to say close to like 40K in quarter and a half of review of doing this of like annual savings just from doing this type of review. And that was based off of creating this type of view, identifying these are the things that aren't working, what, like, if there are either potential replacements or other features of other tools that we use that we can do that, and cutting it. And it saved us about annual of like 40K ARR. We're looking with things that we've identified for this year, depending on how our vendor relationships go and what we can see as ROI, a potential another 150K in the next year of savings, based off of what's been identified with this type of process. So it's absolutely valuable. The other value add, though, is that when you do find new things that you would think are going to be valuable and have value for the business, finance is usually a lot more like lenient with you because they see that you're being thoughtful and mindful with the spend. Like, marketing is usually seen as a cost center. Yeah. And as a marketing leader or whatever role you're in, if you can show to finance early on, hey, this person's thinking of ways to cut costs and still produce results. If there are additional investments you're looking at, they trust you more. Like, that trust is there a little bit more. Yeah. So they don't give as much of a like scrutiny.
Super smart. And again, going back to how do you effectively communicate internally? Like, if you're helping cut costs, that's the whiffy for your finance team. So that when you come back and say, hey, I do need an investment here, it's not always been, can you give me more money? But it actually becomes a give and take. That's super smart.
Yeah.
Well, Sarah, thank you so much for joining me today. If people want to find out more about you, where can they find you?
Find me on LinkedIn, Sarah Segal, S-E-H-D-A-L. I'm there. That's my main social media now. Like, that's I'm a late stage millennial, I guess. Like, I just do LinkedIn really now. So that's you there. I'm in a bunch of the, you know, like Women in Revenue. Those are like really like one of the big things. But yeah, feel free to reach out to me on LinkedIn.
I love it. Well, again, Sarah, thank you so much for joining me today. This has been Scrappy ABM. Hope you all enjoyed. Thanks.
Thank you for listening to this week's episode of Scrappy ABM. If you enjoyed this week's episode, go ahead and give us a follow so that you don't miss a single episode. We drop every single Monday so that you can start your week off right. And if you're looking for additional great content just like this, go check out scrappyabm.com. We're building a library of frameworks, guides, templates, processes, and tools so you have everything that you need to build a low-budget, high-impact, scrappy program. Again, thank you for listening to this episode of Scrappy ABM. This has been your host, Mason Cosby, and we look forward to seeing you in the next one.